Hello, hockey fans. It is the afternoon of Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. Can you believe it? We are in the final week of March. I don't know where this season has gone. And we are coming rapidly down to the end of the NHL regular season. And then right after that, the AHL regular season. So this year is just flying by. This is episode 26 of From the Press Box here on the AHL Report. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm your host, Amy Johnson. I'm the lead correspondent at the AHL Report. I mostly cover the Laval Rocket exclusively, among some other things, some of which we're actually going to talk about today with my fabulous co-host, the one and only Rick Stevens. Rick, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for the lovely introduction, and happy National Joe Day to you.
Happy what?
National Joe Day. Yes, it's to celebrate Joes. It's to take. I think that the. What I heard was you're supposed to take out your favorite Joe for a cup of Joe, which is silly. It's really silly.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, these national holidays are getting, or national day of recognitions are getting out of hand. But, yes,
they are.
So we celebrate, for Canadians fans, we celebrate Joe Morrow and Joe Malone and I didn't just put Joe Morrow and Joe Malone in the same sentence. Joe Malone
I think
being
you did.
The Hall of Famer and Canadians fans just being happy that Joe Morrow is no longer on the team.
That's
or,
true.
Or just Joe Didier, Josiah Didier. How about that? Former.
There you go.
Yeah.
There
Joe
you
Watson,
go.
Joe Watson for the Flyers. There, to bring you into this, we have. Joe Watson, Joe and Jimmy.
Are you all right? You're doing okay.
Joe Sakic, I don't know. How about Joseph Whalen on our own team?
There you go.
Yeah.
It is the International Day of Joseph Whalen.
There we go.
Oh, I have a feeling we're going to hear about that later. But here we are. Week 26 of From the Press Box, rapidly approaching the end of the season, which is hard to believe. It's hard to believe that the next time we convene here on From the Press Box, it will be April. My goodness. We have a lot for you today, starting with, of course, the Rocket Report and whoo, Nelly. It was a rough week for the Rocket last week. We're going to break it down a little bit. We're going to shine the spotlight on a couple of positives to take away from last weekend. Yes, there were positives. I promise we have found the silver lining in a couple of ways. We'll also give you some injury updates and take a look at their week ahead as they are literally, as we speak, on the road on the way to Toronto yet again. Then we're going to switch over to some other hockey news for the AHL. We're going to talk about the player of the week. We're going to pay a brief tribute to the passing of Dick Gamble. And then we're going to take a look at the AHL playoffs race, talk about the mascots a little bit. They've got something going on right now. And also, Rick and I had the honor of covering live in Allentown, Pennsylvania last week, the NCAA Midwest Regional portion of the tournament on the road to the Frozen Four. So we'll talk briefly about the three games that we saw in Allentown and how the brackets are looking for the Frozen Four. Before we head off to the top five, and it's a good one this week. It's a good one. I have a feeling people are going to have opinions about this one. It's a top five bad rules in hockey.
Ooh.
Yeah. And there's plenty of them to choose from. So which ones are your top five most egregious, horrendous, horrible rules in the sport of hockey? We're going to talk about mine and Rick's, and we'll see what you have to say. So we have lots and lots to cover. But Rick, we're going to start on a bit of a sour note, which is the Rockets' performance last week. They had three games. They played Charlotte twice. Charlotte, who is sitting currently fourth in the Atlantic Division, still holding on to a playoff spot. They came in to Laval twice last week, back-to-back, Friday night and Saturday afternoon, and then Laval traveled to Belleville on Sunday afternoon to play the Senators. And, oh, man, you know, things looked good on Friday night. The Rocket came out, played fantastic first period. They had jump in their skates. They had energy. They were pressuring. They were out shooting, I think. Which hasn't happened too often lately. Some of the new guys were in the lineup, and they got up to an early lead. They got up by the end of the second period. It was 2-0 for Laval. Okay, here we go. This is against a tough Charlotte Checkers team. This is the way to do it. Well, they did allow Charlotte to get back into things on Friday night and tie things up and force overtime. And while they actually looked good in overtime, Charlie Lindgren looked good in overtime, but they eventually came up short in getting the 2 points on that night. The following afternoon, they play Charlotte again, and this time it's the exact opposite. They go down 4-0 at one point. Yeah, 4-0 to start the third. They managed to crawl back in with a couple of goals, but just can't surmount a comeback. And then they travel to Belleville on Sunday, who was behind them in the standings. And oh my goodness, again, they got out with the early goal. Kirby Reichel scored early on in the first period. And then it was just all Belleville from there. And that was an 8-2 routing of the Laval Rocket by the Belleville Senators, who not only had a brand new goaltender in net, Philip Gustafsson, fresh off of the finishing of his season in the Swedish league, came over for his first AHL game with Belleville, had him in net. They set a franchise record for goals scored in one game for 8. Ville Poika had a hat trick. It was just, it was ugly. It was ugly. It started out well on Friday night, and it went from bad to worse, Rick, and the wheels kind of came off.
Now one of the silver linings has got to be that in those two games against the Charlotte Checkers, Alex Nedeljkovic didn't score. The Rocket were able to.
You know, that wasn't on my list of silver lining items, but no, he did not. He did not.
Yeah, we were just talking about that a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's true. He did have a stellar goal, empty net goal a few weeks ago. No, they did not allow that to happen. But they allowed just about everything else, including with the loss to Belleville on Sunday. I believe Belleville had moved up to tie them in the standings, which is... That's not what they want either. They don't want to be slipping further back. I mean, not on the silver lining, Mark, is that on Utica on Sunday when Utica won their game, Utica clinched their playoff berth, which officially eliminated the Laval Rocket from the playoffs. Not that they thought that they had a chance, but it just kind of put the last nail in things. On Sunday. And so, yeah, it was
the loss against Belleville, I think, as you said, Charlotte has been playing well. They won 8 of their last 10 and they look like they've been playing well. But then to go to Belleville, and I understand it's a 3-3, but to go into Belleville and suffer the beating that they did by the score they did. And then, as you said, they're both tied with 57 points. Now, Belleville has 2 more wins, and so that, you know, if there's a tiebreaker situation, they've got an obvious advantage there. And look out, as Laval's dropping, the Binghamton is only 2 points back. So
yeah,
you don't want to bad enough. You're going to finish out of the playoffs, but when the bottom of the North Division is in within reach, that would be for the inaugural season in Laval. That would be I would say they would see that as a bit of an embarrassment.
Absolutely. You know, and it's, they've held on to this number five spot in the division for weeks and weeks and weeks. I would hate, and that, I think that's been the hard thing, especially for fans, but even for those of us who are, you know, analysts and reporters and whatnot to watch, is there's talent on this team and you see sparks of it come together like those first two periods on Friday night. And there are bright spots in this season, and there are bright spots in this past month. I can't imagine what it's like for the guys in the locker room to be constantly on the losing end of these games so often, and in the fashion that things are happening. It has to be really frustrating listening to Chris Terry's comments after the game on Saturday against Charlotte. It was, you know, it was reminiscent to me of there was a space in, I want to say it was towards the end of last year when the Canadians were also having a horrible go of things, and Max Pacioretty kept being asked, you know, what needs to change, what's wrong, what's going, and eventually he just said, my answer hasn't changed. If we knew what was wrong, we would fix it. And so it's, you know, I'm sure it's creating an extra amount of pressure on the veteran leaders on the team to try to keep morale up in the room. And they've got three games on the road this week, starting with Toronto. Oh, goody. They play Toronto tomorrow. Then they go into Binghamton on Friday night. Binghamton, they have some success in Binghamton. And especially, like you say, with Binghamton right now only 2 points behind them, they need a win in Binghamton on Friday. And then they go to see Hershey on Saturday. Now, Hershey is in seventh place in the Atlantic. Hershey's not having anything like the years they've had in the past, but they have more points than Laval. They may be further back in their division, but Hershey has 65 points. Laval has 57. So Hershey's won a few more games than Laval has. It would be nice, you know, we'll see how things go against Toronto tomorrow, but it would be nice if they could at least come out with 4 out of the 6 points this weekend.
Yeah, and as you say, what is wrong? And I think we, you know, some of the problems first of all, let's acknowledge that there are quite a number of players up with the Canadians.
Or injured.
And there's some injuries, and there's players filling in. From Brampton, there's other ATOs and whatnot, still, it's not that different from other teams, and
right.
The problem is they're giving up, and it has been all season. They're giving up too many goals. The problem is their defensive zone play, and it's not goaltending. Same as goes for Montreal. They're having problems giving up too many goals, and it's the defense, it's defensive scheme, and they're playing the same. They're using the Julien system in Laval, and they're giving up way too many goals. We talked about you know, a bit of an embarrassment with Belleville with those that lopsided score. Now Laval is at the bottom of the league in terms of goals against, 246 goals given up. That's the most in the league. Belleville is right there with them at 242, and that put Laval in last place with that 8-2 loss that they suffered. So
yeah,
it was a tough loss, and certainly one that must have taken the wind out of any momentum that they had going to the end of the season.
Absolutely. Now, they had the day off yesterday as the Canadians, a bunch of the Canadians players today are taking in the Toronto Blue Jays preseason game and batting practice and whatnot today. A lot of the Laval players, according to their social media feeds, were doing the same thing yesterday. And so, you know, hopefully they got a little rest, a little relaxation, had a little fun, got their mind out of the rink for a little bit. And now they're on a fresh road trip and let's see what they can put together. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only one that would say, you know, they have 2.5 weeks of their season left. Their season ends in Toronto. It's a home and home in Toronto on April 13th and 14th. So they have about 3 weeks left in their season. Would love to see them finish strong. Despite what else has gone on this season, despite the record, despite not making the playoffs, we just want to see them have a strong finish. And hopefully, as we know, they have traditionally played better on the road this season than they have at home. And this road trip this weekend is an opportunity for them to catch some momentum before they head back into Laval again next week. So we certainly hope for that. I did say that there were bright spots, though, right?
Indeed you did.
It's not all depressing. It's not all horrible. First of all, yes, there are injuries. Stéphane LeBlanc is still out with injury, as is Daniel Audet. No one has made any official announcements that they are done for the season, but at this point, I don't even believe that they are practicing with the team. So not sure that they will return this season. Still waiting on official word from that. They haven't officially been shut down yet. Antoine Wakett is also still out. I believe he was practicing last week with a no-contact jersey, so he may be back in the next week or so. But one person who came, I can't even say came back, who came off of injury finally and played finally in his first game for the Laval Rocket this season on Friday night in that first game against Charlotte was Jeremiah Addison. Finally healthy and made. So not only is that a bright spot, we finally have Jeremiah Addison active and playing and on the ice, and everyone should be paying very much attention to this young man to see what he's going to do next year. But he also made an immediate impact in the game. As I mentioned, that first two periods Friday night were excellent. Adam Cracknell scored a goal in the first period. And Jeremiah Addison, in his debut with the Laval Rocket, scored his first goal of the season in the second period, assisted by Anthony Beauregard and Johnny Austin. That's three names that we haven't mentioned much this season. People just tuning in are thinking, they are talking about Laval, right? Yes, that was Jeremiah Addison from Anthony Beauregard and Johnny Austin. And just the complete elation on his face and his teammates' faces when he scored that goal after waiting on the sidelines and rehabbing all season was truly something to smile about and behold. And congratulations to Jeremiah for not only getting back into game playing mode, but getting on the score sheet right away. The other big piece of kind of optimistic news is that despite all of the doom and gloom around the standings and not making the playoffs, is still that Chris Terry manages to just do it all. And he had, oh my goodness, he had one, he, two, three. He had at least 3 points this weekend, if not four. He's still in second place for the overall points race in the league. But he is now only 1 point behind Lehigh Valley's Phil Verone. Phil Verone has 65 points. Chris Terry now has 64 points in the overall points race for the league. For a guy who's playing on a team that has performed as poorly as Laval has this season, that's I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment to do that in any season, but to do it on a team with the record that Laval has is something even more special. And just stick tap to Chris Terry for he's still doing it all. 27 goals, 37 assists so far on the season.
And to do it, to be within 1 point in 13 fewer games. He had that injury just after the All-Star break that had him out for a bit. And so he's played 13 fewer games than Phil Verón and yet only 1 point behind. That's pretty remarkable. He's near a 1.20 points per game pace, which is, there's nobody close in the AHL.
No, not at all. So congratulations to Chris Terry. We'll be, of course, keeping a close eye on that for sure this week to see if, Phil Verone he's going to get points this weekend. I'm sure of that, but we'll see if Chris Terry can also keep up with him and perhaps even pass him and take the lead once again. So there is some good news. There is some good news. And of course, as we mentioned, they'll be in Toronto tomorrow to play the Marlies. And they will the AHL just released an announcement today that tomorrow night's game against the Marlies will be broadcast on TSN2. So fans can catch tomorrow night's game, Marlies versus the Rocket, 7 p.m. Eastern on TSN2. And TSN2 will also be showing the Rocket's last home game against the Marlies on Friday, April 13th as well. But so you can check out the game tomorrow night against the Marlies. And then our AHL report team will be on the road with the team this weekend in Binghamton and Hershey. So be sure to follow along on Twitter at the AHL report. You'll get all sorts of game updates and so forth. And of course, we'll have interviews with some of the players and coach Sylvain Lefebvre after this weekend's events. Keeping our fingers crossed. We want points this weekend. Moving along past the Rocket. Putting the brakes on. Don't want to leave the Rocket quite yet because there is actually a new roster addition today. Another ATO was signed that I should mention. Bailey Webster, 20-year-old defenseman who has played since 2014 for the St. John Sea Dogs in the QMJHL. He was the captain of the Sea Dogs this year. He has been signed to an ATO by the Laval Rocket as of today. That happened earlier today. So another new name to add to the team, Bailey Webster. Okay, so now I can move along. We'll start with the housekeeping. The player of the week, the CCM AHL player of the week, is a name that, Rick, we know pretty well, covering the Laval Rocket. That would be Toronto Marlies goaltender Garrett Sparks. He played in 4 games last week. I'm guessing he got pulled for one of them because 3 of them he started. He won all 3 of his starts, finished with a 1.73 goals against average and a .941 save percentage, stopping 96 of 102 shots. He was busy. He was busy last week, but pretty impressive numbers for Mr. Sparks. It'll be interesting to see if he is who Laval faces tomorrow night in the net.
Congratulations.
Yes, absolutely. Bit of sad news this week. We learned that Dick Gamble passed on earlier this week. I believe had heart trouble, congestive heart failure. Actually, passed away last Thursday evening. His family was with him. He was 89 years old. A big key piece in the Rochester Americans organization, but Rick, there's also some Montreal ties there as well.
He Yeah, and I think this was covered, Joseph Whalen, speaking of Joseph Whalen,
yes.
covered it in a headlines for AHL report.
Mm-hmm.
Was that in the summer? Probably in the summer when his ring was returned to him, and he didn't even know it was missing. His son had,
that's right,
had it and lost it, and then had another one made up, I think, as the story went, and
yes,
and
yeah.
delivered it to him. And anyway, it's they found this ring and went to return it to him, and he's like, I'm not missing a ring. Am I getting the story somewhat correct?
Yes.
Anyway,
no, you are. You are. Yeah, and he was a former Montreal Canadiens player as well, and
yep.
So he's kind of a few fan bases are mourning the passing of Mr. Gamble, and it looks like the family is going to be present for Rochester Americans game for a moment of silence. He, in fact, was on the Stanley Cup champion team for the Canadiens in 1952-53.
Yeah,
so
and that's the ring that went missing. Sorry.
Yes.
Was it that ring or was it an AHL ring? No, it was that. It was.
It was his Hall of. It was his AHL Hall of Fame ring, I think.
Oh, okay.
That's the ring I think it was. Lots of rings. I think he had a lot of rings. I think he had a lot of rings. So tip of the hat to Dick Gamble. We're sorry. To his family for their loss, and American League and National Hockey League families have certainly lost one of their great ones. So we did want to, we touched briefly on the playoff race with Utica clinching on Sunday, and the Amerks had clinched a couple days before that. The North Division is set officially. Toronto Marlies, Syracuse Crunch, Rochester Americans, and the Utica Comets in that order. They are the first division to have their teams set. The Lehigh Valley Phantoms became the first team in the Atlantic Division to clinch a spot last week as well. They are followed second place by the Providence Bruins. Third is Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, and fourth is still Charlotte Checkers. There's only 4 points separating those teams. Providence has 85 points, Wilkes-Barre 84, Charlotte has 81. So those three teams are still very much vying for positioning. The team in fifth place is the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, and they're 9 points back. So unless they go on a big run here, which they're 6-4 in their last 10 games, so they could do that. But Charlotte is 8-2, so Charlotte's on a bit of a win streak as well. So jostling for positioning in the Atlantic Division, and no one has yet clinched the Central or the Pacific. And as we know, the positioning is a little different out there because of certain teams playing less games than others and so forth. But right now, the Manitoba Moose still hold that first place position in the Central Division. However, the Chicago Wolves are only 3 points in back of them. So it's getting a little tighter in the Central Division. And then, Rick, in the Pacific Division, Tucson is sitting on top with 78 points. So we will see how all of that works out. But the North Division, as I believe we joked this weekend, it seems like the North Division was set back in January.
Yeah, indeed. but it's interesting. And speaking of the standings and the division leaders, the topic came up on Twitter this week from Canadiens fans who are just griping about anything and everything these days.
Mm-hmm.
But why can't we have a Calder Cup championship? Why can't we? And if you look at the division leaders that you mentioned, you mentioned Lehigh Valley in the Atlantic, Toronto in the North, Manitoba in the Central, and Tucson in the Pacific. What do all four teams have in common? If you look at their parent teams, Toronto, Philadelphia, Arizona, and Winnipeg, well, Philadelphia, as you will know, they've missed the playoffs 3 out of the past 5 years. The other 2 years didn't make it past the first round. And mm-hmm. Toronto, Arizona, Winnipeg need no explanation. They're the NHL playoff, it has been mostly non-existent for them. Winnipeg got in last year, but lots and lots and lots of pain is required at the NHL level to build up the prospect pool so that you can be competitive. And is a Calder Cup really? I mean, it's not. It would be nice, but
yeah.
Is that your ultimate goal? The last time the Canadiens AHL affiliate won was 2007. That was the Carey Price. Carey Price came in for the playoffs and was outstanding in 2007. But that was a period where the Canadiens had missed the playoffs five out of 8 years. It was miserable. But they were able to build up their prospects and won a Calder Cup. So
and they're deep now.
I know I'm getting off track a bit, but just to answer that question, we were looking at the playoff picture for the AHL, and just to answer the multiple questions that I got about that, be careful for what you wish for, I guess, is,
right.
is how I would
absolutely.
Conclude.
Well, and if you take a look at a team like the Hershey Bears are a team that have traditionally in the past been very stacked to win at the AHL level. This year, not so much. And look at where they're at in the standings. They're in seventh out of eight places in the Atlantic Division. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. There's no way that they're going to catch up with the pack. But their parent club is Washington. Washington is doing very well right now. Washington has a commanding lead on the Metropolitan Division. So again, like you say, be careful what you wish for. It's about where your priorities are lying.
Yeah, it's a good point because there are two different ways to win at the AHL level. One is to build up your prospect pool, and as the teams that I identified do it. There's also the Hershey Bear, Chicago Wolves kind of approach where you load up on AHL free agents, veterans, and try to do it that way. But that's at the sacrifice of, your prospects lose out because they don't get the ice time.
Right.
And experience in different game situations. So, anyway, it's a little bit different in the AHL than people are used to, and so they're having trouble comprehending what exactly is going on.
That's true, and yes, as you say, having a Calder Cup championship would be tremendous. There's no one would ever take that away from any team that won a Calder Cup, nor the experience of going deep into a playoff run, nor the experience of winning a Calder Cup championship. But that's not the purpose at the end of the day of the American Hockey League. It's a developmental league to prepare players for the National Hockey League. And I know that's hot. People are very devoted to their teams and they want to see their teams win. And I, as a fan outside of my job, I totally get that and I totally understand that. But at the end of the day, you don't want to sacrifice player development for winning a championship, because what you want is for all of those guys that you cheer for each and every week is for them to go on and have a successful career in the NHL, not have their career end at the AHL level. So just something to keep in mind. I know. Everyone can grumble at me and say, but. It's fine. Other guys that like to win things are the furry buddies that we all know and love around the AHL, and that's the AHL mascots. And right now, it is the AHL's Mascot Madness time of year. They do this in March during March Madness. And so it's Mascot Madness right now, which means it's the race for who's basically the most favorite mascot in the AHL. They do this every year. So right now it's the semifinals. You can go to theahl.com, and you can click on the link for Mascot Madness, and you can vote up to 10 times a day for your favorite mascot. So right now they're in semifinal group C. So the current mascots that are up for grabs right now to vote on in the semifinals are Kingston, which we all love Kingston from the Ontario Reign, Storm from the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, Coco from the Hershey Bears, Frenzy from the San Jose Barracuda, and Duke from the Toronto Marlies. So you can vote online up to 10 times a day. Then go back. I think it's
don't
at noon.
Don't vote for Duke.
Yes, please don't vote for Duke. Vote for Kingston in this round. Vote for Kingston. You can go back. I think it's every day, like at 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon is when they switch to the next group. And then you can vote again up to 10 times per day. So get your votes in. If you like the mascots and you want your voice heard, they like to have the bragging rights of who is the favorite mascot every year. In fact, I saw the Charlotte Checkers tweeted today that everybody always says that Chubby is their favorite polar bear, but he's never won. That makes me sad for Chubby, because Chubby's one of my favorites. And so I might have to, I'm sorry, Melvin. I'm sorry, Kingston, but I might have to throw a couple of votes Chubby's way as well. Might have to. Last but not least, before we move on to our top five, we should just talk for just a bit, Rick, about the Frozen Four. And we had the privilege this weekend of covering the Midwest regional side of the tournament in Allentown, where we saw Ohio State defeat Princeton on Saturday, and then Denver handed Penn State a pretty good loss there on Saturday night. And so Denver and Ohio State played in the quarterfinal on Sunday, and so we were surprised to see Ohio State, even though they were the number one seed, we were surprised to see Ohio State move on to the Frozen Four over Denver 5-1. But really, it was very good hockey this weekend.
And for folks in Canada, it's junior hockey with less hitting and pep bands. Essentially.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how to describe it. And it's given that more and more NHL players are using this route, using the college route. Mm-hmm. It's hockey that should be paid attention to. And we saw really good, some very good games. I was very impressed with Denver. They've got good structure to their game. They've got some strong players in Troy Terry, an Anaheim pick, and Henrik Bjorkstrom from the Panthers. And they're very well. A couple of Blackhawks prospects on defense, extremely well coached in former Canadian Jim Montgomery, but. Ohio State, give them credit because, I don't know if they would be as talented, but they sure work very hard. They work extremely hard, very opportunistic, and they got great goaltending all weekend and came out. So congratulations to them, and that puts Ohio State in with Notre Dame, who Notre Dame had some, they had an overtime win their first game against Michigan Tech, and then they played Providence and squeaked that through 2-1. So they're kind of battle tested, and they got Jake Evans from the Canadians on their team. There's UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth. And Michigan. So it should be a great tournament that takes place in St. Paul, Minnesota. And,
the semifinals will, the semifinals will be on Thursday, April 5th. It'll start with the 6 o'clock game, Minnesota Duluth playing Ohio State. And then at 9:30, Michigan will take on Notre Dame. Also Habs fans will want to pay attention to the Michigan game. because one of the prospects slated to go top five in this summer's draft, Quinn Hughes, plays for Michigan. So you'll get a good look at him. He and the Michigan squad defeated Brady Tkachuk and Boston University on Saturday. So it was all sorts of big names. As Rick said, it's hockey that we should be paying attention to if you like to keep an eye on up and coming prospects. We've had some big names coming through this tournament, and there's a couple of big ones that are going to be in the semifinals. So it'll be interesting to see how things come down. Those two games will be aired, I believe, on ESPN2. Here in the States, I'm not sure which network will carry it in Canada, but for sure you're going to want to tune in to those. And congratulations to the folks at the PPL Center in Allentown for hosting a very, very good Midwest Regional for their first time around. The Midwest Regional will be held there again next year, as again with Penn State as the host hockey team. So kudos to them. Thanks to them for their hospitality. And we look forward to doing it again next year. But that brings us now, Mr. Stevens,
to
little thing called and oh, today do we have a topic. I'm going to bet that we are going to hear from our listeners and fans on Twitter about this one, because everyone has an opinion on this. Don't tell me you don't. Don't tell me you don't. And there's plenty of things to choose from. So my top five might be different from Rick's top five, might be different from your top five. So be sure to tweet us at the AHL Report on Twitter. Let us know what your top five bad rules in hockey would be. Because we all know you do it. We see you do it every night on Twitter and on Facebook. Every night. There is at least one rule that somebody at one point or another, every user out there in hockey Twitter, complains about. So put your top five that you hate the most all together and tell them what they are. Was this an easy one for you to narrow down?
But for the most part, yeah. My number one has been my number one for many, many years. I've complained about it. So this was a chance to just reinforce that.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some, sorry, you might be surprised at this, but I do have some kind of honorable mention exclusion kind of things that.
All right. Well, go ahead.
To get out of the way at the beginning.
Yes, of course.
Well, not so much that it's a rule, but I guess it's a, what would you call it? A rule, a practice? This red sweater. Well, for the Canadians, it's red sweaters at home. But I want to go back to white sweaters at home for all teams. In all leagues. And I know that the AHL switches halfway through and all that. The NHL doesn't. They wear their colored jerseys at home. And for me, I know when I used to go to the old Winnipeg Arena and they would wear white at home. And you'd like seeing the different colors of the opposing team's jersey that would come in. Because otherwise every visiting team wears white and it's just kind of, we can't tell one from the other.
Well, that's true.
And the other thing it would allow, is that now that Winnipeg is strong and all that, it would allow for the whiteout, which started in Winnipeg's famous, and now that they're back in the playoffs, they want to roll out the whiteout where all the fans wear white jerseys. The effect is amazing. But right now it doesn't make any sense. It's not logical, because if you're all in white and the visitors in white, it looks like you're supporting the visiting team. It's kind of crazy.
Right.
They'll do it anyway. But But so I'd like to go back to White Sweaters at Home.
Okay. So that's an honorable mention.
Yeah. And the others are just kind of quirky. Let's say Why Not is
okay.
This category. So there's a rule that says, rule in the rule book says you cannot have two goalies in the net at the same time.
Why not?
I don't know that it's a big advantage anyway, because you wouldn't be able to, you know, move. But why not?
Why? Can I ask something though? Why does that need to be a rule? How often was that happening? Like, how often was that happening that it needed to become an official rule in the rule book?
They're stacking up, you know, it wasn't side by side. They were stacking up the goalies like cordwood in there, and you know, you couldn't get anything.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There's another rule that, and you'll notice that these have to do with goalies. I don't know why that would be.
Gee, I wonder.
Yeah. So a goalie cannot play the puck on the opponent's side of center ice. Now, why not?
Well, yeah, if he's gonna have the guts to come that far out of his crease, he should be allowed to play it.
Now, go back. I want people to go to YouTube and look for Glenn Hall, look for Jacques Plante. Leading the rush up the ice. And there's one of Glenn Hall, and he dishes it just before he gets to, he carries it out of his zone, dishes it just before he gets to the red line. But it's fantastic. And you have to go back that far to you know, the black and white broadcast to see these things. It would be kind of fun. You know, it's liable to backfire more times than it's successful. So why not?
Why not?
One more here.
Okay.
Goalies cannot change on the fly in overtime in the regular season.
But they can in the postseason?
Yes. The only reason I went into this in the first place is because we saw a few weeks back in Utica, we saw something I had never seen before in my life. Never seen before in my life. End of the
and
game,
we asked
Utica,
Zach Lucalli about it.
Well, that's right. And he hadn't either. So the situation was Lavelle's up, kind of natural that the Comets pulled their goalie, Thatcher Demko, and, you know, to add an extra attacker. But they couldn't get the puck back. Lavelle had it in their own zone. They weren't really threatening, but they were kind of coming up the ice. So as they were slowly making it their way up the ice, a Utica player came off. Thatcher Demko jumped back on mid-play, changing on the fly, as it were, went screaming back into the net, made a save or two,
slid into the
and then flying across, and then he skated back out. Another player went on, all in the course of the play. It was goalies changing on the fly. Never seen it before, ever.
And it was fun. It was kind of fun to watch.
It was fantastic. And yes, Sue asked Zach about it, and he thought it was just kind of
crazy.
He was
like, "Yeah, he went for a good skate there, didn't he?"
And even when he was coming out the second time, there was a bit of coming out and then going back and coming out, but it was great. But there's a rule that prevents teams from, that's fine, but there's a rule that prevents teams from doing that in overtime. You cannot pull your goal. You cannot change on the fly in overtime. If you pull your goalie in overtime, I don't know why you would, but I guess if you really want that 2 points and you don't trust that you'll win it in a shootout, I don't know. Anyway, if you pull your goalie in overtime, you have to wait till a stoppage and play to put him back in.
But in the postseason, then
yeah, it's fine.
That's weird.
And the other thing is, the other quirky kind of thing is that if you do that in the regular season, if you pull your goalie in overtime and you get scored on, you lose the loser point.
What?
Yeah.
Huh. That's someone
yeah,
needs
how,
to look
you
at
to
that.
I want to make a bet on how often that's going to happen.
Oh, it's not.
Hey, wait a minute. Speaking of bets, I'm owed some money for Jeremiah Addison playing on.
That's right. And if you listen to last week's podcast, Rick put a loony down that Jeremiah Addison would play on Friday, and he did, and he scored a goal, which was not part of your bet.
So I think that's double. Yeah, I think that's double
okay,
is required.
Well, I owe you a toonie the next time I see you.
Thank you very much.
And but if I see you in the United States, we don't have toonies here, so you'll just have to wait.
Well, give me a $2 bill. At the exchange, it's worth a little bit more.
Really? Yeah, we don't. That's not something we use quite very often here. You pull out a $2 bill in the United States, people look at you like, "What? Did you rob a bank and just take $2 bills?" Because nobody uses those.
So that's my honorable mentions, quirky kind of why not rules that are just fun thing. It would make it fun.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. All right. Well, I don't really have honorable mentions per se. Because of the things that I had that would be honorable mentions, I'm actually going to lump all in together with my number five. So
we'll
whenever
one,
you, okay. So I'm going to start with number five, and part of the reason that we went with this topic this week is because the GM meetings recently took place in Florida. Are they still going on? I don't know. And other than, you know, everyone always keeps a very close eye on the GM meetings to see what rule changes are being proposed and things that people have complained about all season long. Are they being addressed and things of that nature? And, you know, and just if there's any antics that happen down there, like Mark Bergevin completely getting the cold shoulder from people when he says hi to them, which is
true living from Calgary. Yeah.
Probably one of the most entertaining gifts I've seen this year. I don't know who managed to catch that on camera, that video, but whoo, that wasn't pretty. That was, I felt awkward for him. So my number five is basically three things that either very seriously needed to be looked at and possibly revamped at the GM meetings or was looked at. Goaltender interference, the rules on that right now are kind of the first and foremost on that list for me. And I think everyone else in the league, and that's not just fans, that's not just media, but it's also, I think, players and coaches. I mean, you've heard countless quotes post-game in scrums from players who literally have said to reporters in the locker room, "I don't know, if anyone can tell me what goaltender interference is, I'm sure we would all love to know." It's so incredibly inconsistent. I fear for what's going to happen in the postseason when you know a series is on the line and something's called wrong because of goaltender interference, whether it happens or not. You know, and Gary Bettman was so flippant about it. He's like, "Well, you know, everybody knows what it is." No, they don't. That's the problem. That's the problem. So, you know, there were things that needed to be looked at. Goaltender interference was one of them. The offsides rule is another one. They've decided to not really change anything with that. Although, Rick, is it now that is the war room now going to get the final say if there's a goal scored and an offside review? They're looking for consistency so that the on-ice officials don't have to make that call. But again, I think something needs to be hammered out there. And Could we go back to, if you're going to call slashing, that it should be for an actual slash and not because you love tapped some guy on the wrist? Or because your stick that was ready to break just happened to break when they breathed on it the wrong way?
Stick breaking one drives me nuts. And mainly because the sticks are so fragile. But you know that's taught in at the minor league hockey level to be hard on the other player's stick and the twig snaps and you're in the box. That's I understand that they're trying to and it's dangerous. There's been a lot of injuries when you tap somebody on the wrist, particularly now that they use the short cuff gloves.
Right.
But the stick break thing is, yeah, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, so number five for me was just, I really would like the GMs at the GM meeting to get, just find some consistency in these areas and rules where there seems to be no consistency. Because it's going to burn somebody in the playoffs, and it's not going to be pretty when that happens. And it's not fair to teams at all. So that's my number five.
That's a pretty comprehensive number five right there.
It is.
which makes me wonder what you got coming up, but we'll soon learn that.
That's great.
My number five is the infamous intent to blow.
I forgot about that one.
Intent to blow the whistle. Here's the rule. It's 78.5 in the book. When the referee deems the play has been stopped, even if he had not physically had the opportunity to stop play by blowing his whistle, the goal should be disallowed. And it's basically saying, listen, I wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready.
But
I would have, if I had been ready, I would have, yeah. It's bad. It's just bad. And it's very inconsistent. Your point, for your number five.
Well, yeah, it's just, you either blow the whistle or you don't.
And this one, as far as I know, is not reviewable. So it's even worse. It's just I had intended to, and then you have to kind of, okay, was the puck in or was it what? Yeah. So anyway, it's a dumb rule, and officials be ready. You know, speaking of not being ready, I have never, ever, ever seen so many officials get in the way of the play as we did on the weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
With the NCAA.
They
parked themselves and say, okay, go around, folks. Just
play
just,
around me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. They were very noticeable, and they shouldn't be. They should not be noticeable. All right, so my number four. Bad rules in hockey. What are your bad rules in hockey? Make your lists, people. As you know, I'm sure there are plenty that Rick and I are not going to touch on that irk the heck out of all of you. Bad rules in hockey. Number four. Hybridizing. I understand and was happy, you know, tired of guys getting injured when it was a race to the puck for icing. But I'd be fine with going to no touch icing, just the way that the IIHF does it, the way Europe does it. Just make it icing. Don't make guys try to kill themselves to get there. It's not changing. Like I think it's too subjective. You see, in fact, in the last week, I've at least seen one or two occasions where, you know, a ref waves off the icing at the last second, and it burns the other team who has made the assumption, because it's quite obviously going to be icing, you know, or vice versa. It's just, it's too subjective. I really prefer the way the European leagues do it and the way they do it in the IIHF. And yes, so I'm not a fan of the icing rules in the NHL right now. And I'm glad that guys aren't getting boarded as often, because we're not trying to physically kill each other to get down to the end of the ice as fast as you can to retrieve the puck. But I don't like the way it is right now.
I'll disagree on that one.
Okay.
No, I don't want to go back. Yeah, I don't want to go back to touch icing. And at least with the system they have now, there's a little bit of a race for the puck. Doesn't happen all that often that the icing's beat out, but it does. And so it retains a bit of that competitiveness.
Go ahead.
No, I just don't. It's kind of the least defensive option to me.
And I certainly get that, and I understand that. I guess kind of the theme here for me is I can't stand the subjectivity of on ice officials, because they're human. They get it wrong. Sometimes they get it wrong at really inopportune times. And it's just, I that just bothers the heck out of me. So anyone wants to come up with a, what?
If you keep pushing for the more objective kind of thing, we're going to see drones repping.
That would be entertaining.
But at least
could they shoot lasers?
They'd be out of the way. That would be the one bonus. But
could they shoot lasers? And
yeah, you transport the guy into the penalty box.
Yes. They shoot like a net out around. Okay, this is completely
like
off
a
the rail.
Star Trek thing. They use the transporter and they transport them in. You know, you see them appear. You know.
All right, so your number four would be what?
Shooting the puck over the glass in the defensive zone. And here I want them to have some judgment. Here I want them to use some common sense. The automaticness of as soon as the puck is shot over the glass in the defensive zone, whether intentional or not, there's no discretion involved. It's an automatic penalty, and it's kind of dumb, because how different is shooting the puck? If let's say you do intend to, let's say you need a, you know, you need a whistle or a change or whatever it is. If you shoot the puck over the glass intentionally, how different is that from icing the puck?
Mm-hmm.
It's not all that different. So why not treat it the same, and treat it the same as icing? But if you're going to call penalties, allow some discretion and let the officials try and determine intent, because I just don't like it. It's one of the worst penalties that you can get in. The busting somebody's stick and shooting the puck over the glass are two of the worst penalties that you can get in hockey.
Well, I'd have to concur with you, because it's my number three. I just think it's the dumbest penalty. It's pointless. A lot of times it's accidental. So you get penalized for something that you did accidentally. And as you say, what's the difference between that and intentionally icing the puck? You know, you don't get a penalty for that. I don't have much more to add to that. You covered the bases there. I think it's a really stupid penalty. I think it's a really stupid rule. And I think that it should definitely be reconsidered or restructured or something, but it shouldn't be an automatic It shouldn't be an automatic.
So for my number three, my number three was covered in your omnibus bill number five.
I see.
The offside rule and the whole skate in the air business.
Yeah.
That you have to have your foot down and on the ice. I think I'm sad to hear that there's going to be no change on that, because I think, first of all, I think it's dumb as far as the whole skate in the air business. Secondly, the review that happens, they have a an old Motorola flip-phone masking tape to the blue line. That's the quality of the video that you get from the blue line cam.
Oh, the video is horrible.
How can you tell with the poor quality video? Anyway, the whole thing stinks. So and you presented it pretty well, and I'm disappointed that they're not going to entertain any kind of change on that. So that's my number three.
Well, because, you know, hey, Gary Bettman says that everybody knows the rules about everything. So why should you reconsider or reevaluate anything? So, you know, if Gary says it, it must be true, right? Mm. My number two, I'm gonna make a bet here today. I'm going
to
make
You're
a bet
You're just trying to
today.
Get the toonie back, that's all.
I'm going
to
try to get my toonie back. And so,
it's killing you, isn't it?
I like to gamble, people. He started this. I'm going to lay down a bet, and we're going to know if I won this bet very quickly, because I'm going to bet that my number two is your number one. I'm going to bet.
And I'm forced to take this bet. Apparently.
Well, I wasn't given a choice as to whether or not to take your bet about Jeremiah Addison. You just kind of put it
out
there.
Well, that was a bit of a reach, don't you think? He's been out all season, and I predict the day that he comes back and plays.
After I said it's looking like Jeremiah Addison could make his debut this weekend, and so then you said, well, I say it's going to be on Friday.
Still. Now, you wait until we go all the way through all of the picks. We're down to number two, and you're going to go ahead.
Yeah.
What if I change? What if I change?
All of you, listen, if you hear the scratching of a pen or a pencil or an eraser, you let me know. The trapezoid rule. Yeah, see, he's going to quickly change his number one. I knew it. The trapezoid rule has got to freaking go. Please. Let a goalie play the puck wherever in God's name they want to play the puck. Stop. Stop. Just stop. You know, they call it the Brodeur rule. And it's... Nobody has liked it ever since they implemented it. Why do you want to tie the hands of a goaltender? If a goaltender is good at playing the puck, then let them play the puck. Don't tie their hands. If a goaltender is not good at playing the puck, then they're not going to be good at playing the puck, whether they're in the trapezoid or whether there is no trapezoid. So let them play the puck. And I will keep my commentary on this one to a minimum, because I guarantee that I just got my toonie back, because I guarantee that this is
fair.
I guarantee that this is Rick's number one.
Bet I've ever. I've only been bitching about it since 2005.
I haven't known you that long, but I believe you, because. Let's see, I joined the team in 2009, and you've been bitching about it since then, so I would imagine. It's just a terrible rule. It's a terrible rule. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense to me. Let the goalies play. Just let them, just stop. And there are even officials who have been on record as saying that they've called a penalty on a goalie incorrectly because they kind of like lost sight of where the lines for the trapezoid were. Like, come on. I'm sure that doesn't happen as often these days, but, and I don't remember the last time I saw an NHL goaltender get penalized for playing the puck outside the trap, but it's just stupid. And I will let Rick expound fully on this when he gets to his number one, because I'm sure that this is his number one bad rule in hockey. And you may not say, oh, it's also my number two, and switch your number two and number one. You can't do that, because we will all know.
Well, I will maintain my integrity here.
There you go.
My number two is, again, one of your that was lumped into the number five.
Oh, really?
The goalie interference.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that will change, although we don't know how. But mainly, and it's what you said, no one has any idea what's goalie interference and what's not. It's inconsistent. And it seems that in the reviews, they're looking for any kind of touch or gentle brush. And that's not the intent of the rule.
That's
the,
not
the
interference.
Rule is,
no.
is, yeah, it's supposed to be that the goalie is prevented from making a save. And you know, it's just like in the NFL, if the pass had no chance of being completed, you pick up the flag. It's the same sort of situation, same sort of common sense they need to use in this situation. And not these brush or taps or touches. It should be that the goalie was prevented from making a save. And we'll see what they come up with.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of confidence, by the way, but
no.
in that they'll get this right. But at least they're looking at making a change.
Absolutely. Why don't I let you go ahead and talk about your number one overall?
Oh, I wonder what my number one is.
Bad rule in hockey. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
It is the worst rule in hockey. It has been the worst rule in hockey since 2005, the lockout year when it was implemented, the trapezoid rule. It's horrible. It's stupid. It's penalizing goaltenders for being good at something, for being good at handling the puck. How else is that implemented? You know, oh, you're too good at that, and we have some guys over here that aren't quite as good at that, so we're going to put in a rule to level the playing field. Where else does that exist? Get rid of the rule. Let's give a positive to the NCAA. They don't have a trapezoid rule.
Nope.
Yes, goalies should be able to play the puck outside the trapezoid. Change the rule. You'll as you said, you'll feature the good puck handlers. The bad puck handlers are going to be fun to watch too, because they're gonna turn it over.
They're gonna
and
try
more goals. Yeah, well, of course they will. But it also relates to reducing the injuries and the wear and tear on defensemen, because the goalies will be, you know, we see it with Carey Price, and that was really missed when he was out for as long as the Canadians didn't have a really moving goaltender at that point, and he can be a third defenseman back there at times, but that helps prevent defensemen from getting hammered into the board. So. And, you know, I was talking about the kind of quirks in the rules in my honorable mentions. They were all goalie rules. There's another quirk here. Did you know that there's an exception that goalies can play the puck in the trapezoid if they have a skate in the crease?
What?
Now you ask, I'm sure this is going to be your question. Well, what's the difference
from the traffic zone,
from the no-go zone to the crease at 7? That would be 7 feet. But if you somehow can keep your toe of your skate in the crease and reach out with your stick, thereby completely exposing yourself to the trapezoid, you can play it. Which is I have no idea why you put that
exception in there. I don't know what's stupider, the rule or that part of the rule.
Yeah, I don't know either. Why you would even put that exception in? And has it come up? I guess you could reach out and knock the puck down for a defenseman. Maybe that's what they're going for.
Yeah,
I don't see how you could. Yeah, I really don't see how you could play it very effectively with your toe in the crease. I don't know.
Yeah, congratulations. If you're Ben Bishop, then you can lay down and play the puck. And if you're Dustin Tokarski, you're screwed. I mean,
well, he's screwed anyway.
Well, he's playing well for the Lehigh Valley Phantoms this year. I can't knock him, and they're going on a playoff run, so I can't jinx him. Anyway, thank you for confirming my bet so quickly for me. It's really good. I'm glad we're even again. I'm glad we're even again. That no one owes anyone any money right now. That's very good. That's very good. That brings me to my number one rule in hockey, and I hate. I just wish this would just die a fiery death. And that is games being decided by a shootout. I would like the shootout to go away forever.
Yeah, but then David Darnay would be out of a job.
Well... Let me cry for him a little bit. You know, I cannot fathom. And you hear guys in a locker room again. I reference the guys who play the game, and how many times in a post game scrum, when the team that's being in, the guy that's being interviewed is on the losing team after a shootout, and some reporter asks some stupid question about, you know, losing in the shootout, and they always make a sarcastic remark about, well, you know, when a game comes down to a skills competition. They're not saying that as a compliment to the skills competition. They're saying that because you're taking something that's just supposed to be entertainment, and you're using it as a form of how to determine the winner of a hockey game instead of actually playing hockey. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the 3-on-3 format of overtime. But a shootout and fine, you know, you can't have whatever. NBC, TSN, whoever, can't have games going into, you know, 6 overtimes to determine a winner, but there has to be a better way to do it than going to a shootout. I cannot imagine going out there and putting everything on the line for 65 minutes and everything comes down to essentially the luck of the draw on, is their goaltender on point tonight? Is the coach going to pull the shooters that can actually find the back of the net tonight? And are the guys who are going to shoot have enough skill or hands or whatever to find their way through the goaltender? It's just not a way to win a hockey game. It's just not. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I wish it would die.
So it didn't help when Claude Julien sent David Schlemko out for the shootout, I guess.
Oh, my God. Let's see. I have Alex Galchen. No, Dave Schlemko should go out. Let's just give him a twirl out there and see how he does. Honest to God.
Because he had a really cool one on YouTube. I would like to see them create more opportunities for the game to be won in overtime. And I don't remember. I know they looked at this in the last couple of years, and I don't exactly remember what it was, what the proposal was. But Ken Holland, GM from the Red Wings, had an interesting. It was kind of a graduated thing. I think the overtime went from 5 to 7 minutes, and they might have lost a player along the way. Went from 3 to. I don't remember what it was, but it was. At the time I thought it was an interesting way to give the opportunity for it to end in overtime more often and fewer opportunities for shootouts. So I know it has to end somehow. And we don't want to go back to tie games, but maybe that's a way around or a way of satisfying your hatred of the shootout.
Yeah, I believe a hockey game should be won by playing hockey. Plain and simple. I'm gonna get a t-shirt made that says that, because I know if I were playing the game, that's how I would want to win the game. So.
But if you're gonna go to a shootout, speaking of goalie rules again, goalie should be eligible, because I think that one of the best shootouts I ever saw in my life was 2009 when the All Habs arranged for all kinds of fans from around North America to come, and we had that U.S.-Canada ball hockey game at McGill. And was tied and went into a shootout. And goalies were eligible. And
that's right. That's right.
Yes. And it was decided. It was Eklund from Hockey Buzz was in goal. And he got beat by Charlotte. That was the winning goal, as I remember. Joe Yurdenier there with the official stripes.
That's right. He was our zebra for the day.
Yeah. From NHL Buffalo. He was great too. Anyway,
absolutely.
Just if you're going to have a shootout, make it really entertaining.
Make it really entertaining. Well, I would imagine that all of you listening have some pretty strong opinions on the rules that Rick and I both broke down in our top five, and probably some that we didn't touch on as well, because let's face it, folks, there are a lot of really bad rules in hockey. And so we would love to hear your take. Hit us up on Twitter at the AHL Report. You can also find Rick personally at All Habs. You can find me at Flyers Rule. Let us know what your top five worst, horrible, bad rules in hockey are. We would love to hear them and share them. And maybe someday they'll change. Maybe someday. And that's it for us for today. This was a jam-packed show. Rick, thanks so much for being here again.
Glad
of course,
to be here.
We have a great road trip
to,
ahead.
To Joe Whalen. National Joe Day, don't forget that.
National Joe Day. Joe, you have to tell us what we have to do to celebrate International Joe Day. Be sure to listen to all of our other podcasts here on Rocket Sports Radio. You don't want to miss any of them. We've got a lot of variety and really, really fun shows. We have Hab a Listen with Lewis and Gibby. We have Habs Unfiltered with Blaine and Trigg. And of course, Chris G and Rick co-host our live Canadians podcast called Habs 360. That's every Saturday afternoon live at 2:00. You can call into that show, join the conversation, and make your voice heard about, you know, whatever the topic is. And they also have great guests on that show as well. So be sure to tune into all of our podcasts here on Rocket Sports Radio. But of course, come back here again next Tuesday here at the AHL Report for another great episode of From the Press Box. We'll be fresh off a road trip with the Laval Rocket, hopefully with some wins, fingers crossed. But we will, of course, have audio clips from our interviews with some of the players over the weekend and Sylvain Lefebvre. So you won't want to miss that. as we come down the stretch here, getting close. Let's see how the end of the season is going to shape up. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll see you back here next Tuesday.